Blog Talk Radio.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, June 19th, 2015, and this is Jeff Dunphy.
And I'm Jameen Aponte.
And this is Retooling for Our Coming of Age. This morning, we wish to share with you a list of things that we find are quite pertinent and germane to our journey, and they are the 20 signs that you are embodying your higher self. So what we're going to do is we're going to wander through these and then have a dialogue between us and bring these things to light, trusting that they are helpful to you in your journey. So we'll start with the first one, which I'll have Jameen read, and then we'll deal with it.
Higher sensory perception is number one on the list, and it is when your intuition is developing at a rapid rate. It says here, other higher senses like clairvoyance and clairaudience can also be turned on. These higher senses allow you to access information and wisdom that otherwise would be unavailable through the use of your rational mind. Harmonious lucid dreaming and out-of-body experiences are also ways to access higher dimensional information.
We have dreams, we have remembrances, sometimes where we read a book years and years ago, and all of a sudden it just presents itself to you. You just, you can't remember where it basically came from, where the information came from, but you just feel smart and plugged in. You feel almost as if somebody's feeding you information.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the clairs. So clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, and for anyone out there who doesn't know what that is.
Okay. Well, let's wander through. Our gross physical senses are touch, hearing, smell, taste, and sight, and those are of the physical body. However, when we hear of people getting almost ready to get on a plane and going, oh, no, something's about bad to happen. I can see it. I can just see it, or I can feel it, or whatever. We talk about these as the higher senses, and the higher senses are three or four of them. Clairvoyance is being able to see, not with your physical eyes, but with what the sages in the Far East would call with your mind's eye.
And so from an energetic point of view, clairvoyance would be a very open ajna, or your third eye center, which is right above, right around in between your eyebrow area.
Right. And Douglas Baker calls this the sacred square inch in your forehead, in between your eyebrows.
And so lots of people have experiences with clairvoyance and they don't even know it. So there's lots of people out there who, when they were kids, had seen ghosts, or have had experiences in their dreams where they were talking to people who have passed and things like that. And so those would be examples of clairvoyance.
Yeah, exactly. And the next would be clairaudience, which would be hearing, but not with your physical ears. And hearing in a sense of sounds, or hearing in deep in meditation, oftentimes we hear angels whispering or angels singing, or Plato spoke of the music of the spheres, the planets themselves having a tune. And in fact, you read an article just a little while ago on that, didn't you?
NASA just recently discovered that the rings of Saturn or Uranus has musical tones. And so the planets actually do play music. And science is becoming more and more familiar with this and bringing this to light in a scientific way. And so it's becoming a lot more mainstream, these things. But clairaudience is more of a lot of times you might run across someone, or I've run across a person who says that they can hear conversations happening in another room, or they can things speak to them, or they hear voices. And a lot of young people these days, teenagers, are being admitted for things like schizophrenia and mental disorders, when in fact they're actually
clairaudience. Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. And then the third one would be clairsentience. And clairsentience, and women generally have a very high rate of this, more so than men, because men are in some parts thicker than women.
Well, it has a little bit to do as well with the left brain, right brain. Okay, so, and men tend to have masculine energy, and it doesn't really have to do with gender as so much as what part of your brain is more dominant, and your left brain would be considered the masculine energy, and it's more logical, more scientific. And then your right brain would be the creative side of your brain, and more open to these sorts of experiences, more sense, more sensual, more of a sensate.
And the reason women have that is because the brains in women's bodies are different than the brains in men's bodies. The women's brains are far more integrated. In fact, they've proven this. So the interesting irony when Gloria Steinem came out and said boys and girls are exactly the same, I think she actually wasn't privy to that scientific research that said women's brains are more integrated. So consequently, they have the capacity to feel and sense these things a little more adequately or more appropriately than men do.
But I will just say that it's not absolute. So because you're a woman, doesn't mean you automatically have this, and just because you're a man doesn't automatically mean that you don't have this.
Yes.
But what more germane to this, to clairsentience, is this idea of being an empath, or the ability to kind of feel other people's emotions. And a lot of people do have this empathic ability, and they don't realize it, and they take on other people's emotions.
They let other people's, for want of a better phrase, other people's crap affect them rather than recognizing that they have their own journey to do and they have to pay attention to their own.
But we could talk about
forever.
For like three shows. Four.
Exactly. And we have a wee list to get through. And the second one is knowing your soul purpose. And with your higher senses turned on, it's become crystal clear what your purpose is, your soul's purpose. We talk about this. We talked about this in university as your genius. You're allowing your genius to manifest. Not only do you know what your mission here on Earth is, but you're fulfilling this mission by taking actions. You are inspired by things that are creative, and you are following them, and you kind of don't know why, but you just know that you must do that. Okay, you're fulfilling your basic human needs of self-growth and contributing by being on this path, and the path of self-actualization and being at the service of others. And we talk about allowing the genius to manifest itself within. And as David wrote in one of our blogs of late, we become a soul-infused personality.
And we both highly suggest that if you haven't done so, head to our website, retooling.org, on the blog, David's blog. And David Clay is writing a series right now on the soul-infused personality, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But I think that this idea of knowing your soul purpose is twofold, because every soul's purpose is to have a human experience,
mm-hmm.
And to have a dominion in some way over the vehicle, right? But it's different than what your mission is.
Well, I mean, I think we manifest in our physical bodies in order to fulfill our mission. But I think maybe this is where you're going. Sometimes your mission is to take a one or two or three or five or 10 lifetimes just to wake up. And so consequently, maybe the focus of one lifetime isn't so much to discover your mission. It's just to discover what it's like to live. And then after you've died, you go and sort of do a review and you sort of think, well, isn't that interesting? Because I think it's part of our evolutionary process that it takes us a while to wake up, but then as soon as we figure out that we're allowing the genius to come through, as soon as that genius or the soul starts to dictate where we're going, you can accelerate your path of evolution.
Right.
Okay, on to number three.
Meeting your soul family. So I think, well, it's true that once you begin to walk on the path of enlightenment or the path of initiation, there's lots of names for it, the path of awakening, you begin to raise your vibration, you begin to shed relationships and situations and things that no longer serve this vibration because your vibration is higher, and so you begin to attract the people who you resonate with on a soul level.
Exactly. And consequently, have you ever met those people that you just look at and you meet them and you just think, I've known you forever, even though you've met them and only been in their presence for a few minutes, and you're almost finishing each other's thoughts, your inclinations are the same, your sense of humor resonates, there's just this comfortability around people like that that is beyond description of the conventional, this is your only life, this is your only experience stuff. I mean, it does start to render you appreciative of the fact that when you meet somebody that you have a connection with, it transcends time and it transcends perhaps this lifetime.
And these are the people that you can be miles and miles away from, live on opposite sides of the world, see each other once a year, once every 2 years, once every 5 years, and when you do see each other, it's like no time has passed whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of the law of attraction, finding those people who are attuned to that higher level, and also part of
these
and
it's people. Very interesting too, because depending upon what your soul purpose or what your soul mission is, you are either your soul family is very dispersed or your soul family is very interesting. So that's something to think about too.
Yeah, exactly.
So number four, meeting your twin flame or soulmate. A twin flame or soulmate relationship is one with a person that highlights and enhances your best qualities. So this person will literally mirror back to you everything you need to see in order to grow in a spiritual way. And everyone knows that relationships are the most intense situations for growth, because you can't escape how you are when you're with this person every single day. And so relationships in themselves mirror who you are as a person, help you grow. But in a twin flame relationship or a soulmate relationship, it's to grow towards a more soul-infused personality. It's to grow towards a more service-oriented lifestyle. How about you speak on that?
I mean, I think there's, we need to be ever mindful of the new age nonsense that comes about soulmates and all that fluffy stuff. And I think the act of waking up is a harsh act. It's a challenging act. The enlightenment isn't easy. And when you meet a soulmate, when you meet somebody that you know that you're supposed to be together with, the interaction is progressive, but it's also very disruptive. It disrupts your old reactive selves. It disrupts your sense of who you are, and it's
sometimes lifetimes old patterns that have been around for lifetimes and lifetimes, not just this one.
Yes,
and so
that's exactly right.
It can feel confusing at times, and it definitely can feel very challenging. But at the end of the day,
it's almost an extrication process, because I think what happens when you find a soulmate is you start to move from, which is very typical in conventional society, you start to remove yourself from what's in it for me in a marriage or in a relationship or in a partnership to what's in it for us. And then you start to think of it and you as part of a we, as opposed to as part of an individual. And it's a very interesting investigative process. And as you know, as we were saying, not necessarily easy at times.
Well, one of the points about this one that I think is super important is that soulmates are not always romantic relationships.
No, that's exactly right.
But they have been romanticized in our culture and in our society by our mainstream culture. And the New Age movement has really romanticized this notion.
Yeah.
And sometimes a soulmate is in your life to teach you a lesson, to help you get to the next level, and then it's time to move on. And that's something that's important to recognize as well.
Absolutely. You will meet those individuals that strike you as absolutely connected with you. And it is a very magic place, and it is also a very, it's very important for them, that aspect of your discovery, to be acknowledged. You have to be able to acknowledge that, not just to pass it by or pass it off as a coincidence.
It's a really interesting feeling when you feel like your soul is excited and jumping up and down because of a relationship or coming together with another person that you are clearly connected with on a completely different level than just the human physical level.
Yeah, absolutely. We are more than our personalities. Which brings us to number four, synchronicities and accelerated manifestations. what's happening now is that you're starting to live your life where things are happening in a way that it is self-evident that you're becoming more and more connected. Your questions are answered through synchronicities, and hidden messages are easily revealed to you by the power of your higher senses. You find messages and answers in books or nature, or even random conversations. And as such, you become aware of how strong and powerful your intent has become. And this also presents itself. And when you focus on things happen quickly. And as a genius of manifestation, Jameen has oftentimes, when she puts her mind to something, it has been quite dramatic in terms of things manifesting very, very quickly.
Sometimes a little too fast. You have to be, if you're in this stage or you get to this stage, you have to be really conscious of what you're asking for, what you're thinking about, what you're focusing your mind on. It can be a harsh lesson in a sense, because if you have been brought up or have grown in a negative environment or an environment that is critical or full of condemnation and negativity, then as your manifestation skills develop and grow, you actually have to be so conscious of that so that you're not recreating negative situations in your life.
Yeah, no question. No question. Number five.
Number five is taking responsibility for your happiness. As you embody your higher self, you realize how powerful you are and how you really are the one who is co-creating your reality with your thoughts and your emotions, kind of what I was just talking about. And so in this one, you're just taking full responsibility for your own happiness, and you're not blaming other people or government entities or any outside sources other than yourself. Playing the victim is a thing of the past, and you are taking full charge of your healing and evolutionary process.
It's a very valid aspect. Happiness is a sense of, or a mindset. And so when we posted on the blog, when shit happens, we just say plot twist and carry on.
Right.
And when you have an attitude of that, when you have a happiness attitude about things, you are merely given these tasks in order to see how you will embrace them and move with them. Right.
And it's also a learning process as well. I don't want people to get the impression that these things magically happen, because that's not how it is. You don't wake up one day and then you are magically happy and you're able to, you know, just move through life and everything is great. It is a process like everything else, and that is what it means to be human. You learn things through your experience, and as you continue to have experiences, as your higher self is more embodied into your body, those experiences just become easier and easier and easier.
Yeah.
And it
doesn't
mean that they just disappear. It is a process.
There's a sense of an ebb and flow, but there's a sense of a climbing ebb and flow. So the lows of 3 years ago are much lower than the lows of now. And the highs of 3 years ago are much lower than the highs of now. And so there's an ebb and flow as you wander through your evolutionary process. And your happiness transcends the low rate of happiness to joy and bliss. You feel as if you're on the path. You feel as if you're just embracing what you're supposed to be doing, which is a lovely thing.
And, you know, I will say this, though. Some people do heal instantaneously. They are able to shed things away right away. And some people don't. Some people, it's a process that comes and goes in waves. And so that's something to consider too. It's very individual. It's very individual to the person.
Yeah, I think, and that's also part and parcel of embracing your humanity and not beating yourself up for not being perfect, because we do sometimes, we often have this socialization of, we are supposed to be perfect, and when we're not perfect, we're supposed to be ashamed or afraid or whatever.
And we're going to get to that in a couple of minutes here. So
exactly.
Number six is
embracing all of your emotions. So part of recognizing that your emotions are important is also recognizing that they aren't who you are. And you finally transcended or the spiritual bypass that some emotions are bad or negative. And instead what you do is you recognize them, you see them, and you embrace all of them. And instead of repressing them, which leads to dis-ease, what you do is you allow them to flow through you. You can use anger for passion or motivation. You can easily empathize with others while maintaining the integrity of your field. When we repress or suppress our emotions, it manifests itself in disease.
Yeah, because it gets stuck in, from an energetic perspective, it gets stuck in your energy system. And so if you're thinking of your energy system as this beautiful, flowing, moving bits of energy that are moving through all different parts of your body, they're all different colors, they're going in various directions through and over and under. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got a big pit of anger in your solar plexus area, the energy is not flowing through that area. And then it begins to affect your organs, and then it begins to affect your bloodstream. And from an energetic perspective, that is how disease happens.
Yeah, exactly. And as we wander through the emotions, if you can catch yourself feeling angry, if you can catch yourself feeling excited, if you can catch yourself feeling frightened and stop right in the middle of it and say, ah, here I am being frightened.
Yep.
We talk about this in Egypt. We talk about this as being the witness. Can you witness yourself being upset? Can you witness yourself being excited? Can you witness yourself being engaged in some conversation? That's a very important attribute to have, to be able to watch yourself feeling emotions, because then you can feel them, watch them, and allow them to flow through you, not attach yourself to them.
Another way to think about it from more of a psychological standpoint is that we are, if you're not conscious and present, if you're not working on being conscious and present in your body in every moment, then you're usually on an autopilot, or you're usually in a state of reactivity, or you're working in your subconscious, and your subconscious is like a program that we talked about this on not last show, because I wasn't on last show, but the show before,
right,
where you are you're just not conscious of what you're doing, and you're in this state of constant reactivity. And so trying to be conscious and trying to be present really is the key to being able to see and witness your emotions.
Absolutely.
As they're happening.
And here's a musical reference that we've recently been chatting about, but there, and this is also written about in the book called The Untethered Soul, but it's you're listening to a James Taylor song that you had a breakup with a boyfriend when you were 16, right? You were listening to this song when
you're
Bob, or Bob and Gladys, yes. Bob and Gladys were dating, and at 16, Bob came in, or Gladys came in and said, you know, it's not you, it's me, but I want to move on. And this James Taylor song was playing. Well, now 10 years or 15 years later, you're listening to that James Taylor song, and instead of appreciating that it is a lovely song, you've associated it with an emotion that's completely stuck in your system, and all you can do is relive that, oh, he dumped me, or oh, she dumped me energy, and you carry that around. And that is when, what Jameen was just making reference to, is when you are in reactivity, you are engaged in something that isn't present. You aren't present, right?
Yeah, and it's pretty common. But what we're talking about is as your higher self begins to embody yourself, this all becomes much easier. You're able to see it as it's happening.
And you're able to see, maybe there's a way to see the song not as just the song that was playing, but another a song that doesn't have those associations, right?
Number 7, holographic nature of reality. So as the famous poet Rumi once said, you are not a drop of water in an ocean. You are the entire ocean in a drop of water. So in this one, in number 7, what's happening is you're beginning to realize the holographic nature of our world, and that reality is truly encoded within you, and you can sense an interconnectedness with everything and everyone. And so it becomes obvious to you that we are living in a multi-dimensional matrix, and that you even have multi-dimensional anatomy. And you also begin to feel very attracted to sacred geometry, which is interesting because
it's one of Jameen and my aspirations and inspirations is the use of sacred geometry in some of the work that we do. Now, I want to chat a little about holograms.
Yeah, this is a really good topic. Okay.
Because one of the aspects of a hologram is that when you create a holographic plate, you shine a laser beam through it and you create a picture. But unbeknownst to most people, if you take that holographic plate once it's been created and you smash it on the floor, you can take the tiniest of slivers of that hologram and you can shine a laser in it and it will show the full hologram. It's embedded in the film.
So it's like a honeycomb in a sense. Like it's one big picture, and then as you are as you zoom down, it's all the same in every little piece. So I want to talk a little bit more about sacred geometry. We just had a little knock on the door. I have recently become very interested in drawing sacred geometry, so just figuring out and learning how to do it ourselves. And one of the things that we're taught is that if you want to understand sacred geometry, what you need to do is you need to draw it. And so that's something for, you know, if this is something that appeals to you, if you feel like this stage really appeals to you and you really get this and this resonates with you, I highly suggest that you start, go buy a sketchbook and a protractor and start drawing sacred geometry. It is a very soothing activity. And I will also say that if you do it right before bed, you have some very, very interesting dreams.
Wonderful. Okay, number 8. As you are embodying your higher self, as your genius is starting to manifest itself into you, you are experiencing all chemical and healing powers. And whether it's hands-on healing or soul-related or soul retrieval or any other type of healing, what you're learning how to do is direct your intent and manipulate energy to remove energetic blockages. And you easily connect to this genius or your higher self. And you can disengage discordant energies that hinder your spiritual evolution. And oftentimes you will be using this to assist in the healing and ascension process of and for others. And this is something that Jameen has been studying now for some time.
Yeah.
In terms of esoteric healing and some of the practices that you've done in your practice as well.
Yeah, some years now. And there's many different modalities. And what I'm learning now is that and this is the case with everything, but they all shift and change. So, you know, you start and you learn Reiki and you learn, I learned something called bioenergy healing, which is a more dynamic form of healing. If you read books by Alice Bailey, like Esoteric Healing, that really goes into depth about the difference between radiant healing and magnetic healing, and then there's telepathic healing. There's all sorts of different healing modalities to explore and to receive, and it's just a matter of what you resonate with and what you what kind of makes your soul giggle in a sense. And it's like this kind of feeling of this like, ooh,
yeah,
like that, I want to do that.
Well, I also think it's important to recognize that what we conventionally think of as disease is almost never of the body. It's always of the higher vessels. And we talk about the 7 vessels we have, but the vessels or the vehicles that encompass our personality are the physical, the etheric, the astral or emotional, they're both referred to as both of those, and the mental. And so if you have issues in those bodies, they often manifest in the physical. So when you become more competent in your healing modalities, you become more aware of how to allow that energy to flow freely, because most disease has to do with congestion. And when you can dispense or dispose of the congestion, it allows energies to flow. Okay, number 9.
Activating your DNA. So DNA activation is basically a process of bringing in more light into your what is called your morphogenic field for your 7 bodies. And it is What is happening is you are activating the dormant strands of DNA that correspond to your soul self, your higher self. So we, as human beings, have 12-strand DNA templates, but we only use, how many strands do you know off the top of your head?
Well, we know that we don't use anywhere near enough. And one of the things that's happening in the activation of our DNA is how we change our DNA. We also know that we can change the DNA of our ancestors and also of our
family members and our pets.
And even our pets. So it's incredibly important.
So DNA activation is the key to spiritual ascension and the embodiment of your higher self. So in order for your higher self to embody your body, your DNA must be activated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, number 10. This talks about unconditional self-love. Your fourth strand of DNA corresponds to your heart chakra. Funny, heart chakra is the fourth chakra. One of the main benefits of DNA activation is being able to access and embody a state of unconditional self-love. No longer do you feel the need to extract love from other people. Instead, you see yourself as an infinite source of love. And a sense of wholeness begins to unfold as you love all aspects of yourself, including your shadow self. And your shadow self is that dark part of yourself, that dark side of yourself that creates an understanding and a sense of things. Okay.
Number 11, integrating and transcending your shadow self. So your shadow self is the part of you that is running in reverse. It is mainly made of archetypes, personas, and complexes. Some examples are the professional victim persona, the rescuer archetype, the sorcerer, the tyrant, and the absolute perfectionist. And you alluded to that earlier. The shadow self is what causes self-sabotage and causes you to create chaos in your life. The shadow self is created by making decisions that are not aligned with your higher self and manifests and it manifests in your DNA.
And your shadow self reverses codes in the DNA. So part of
it creates distortion.
That's exactly right.
And
part of this is getting your personality with your soul call. And when your personality tries to take control of things, it tries to empower itself. And many times that empowerment of your personality is at the expense of your soul direction. So if your soul is saying, please travel along 137 degrees, and your personality is saying, to hell with that, I want to travel at 120 degrees, what's happening is your personality is steering the ship. And in fact, as you evolve, your personality becomes more and more connected to your soul. So it's not standing in the soul's way. Your shadow self is that which sabotages. It's that which plays back old history. I'm a victim, poor me. The psychoses occur in conventional psychology.
I will say that as this step is happening, it is, I think, the most uncomfortable part of one of the most, if not the most uncomfortable parts of a journey on the path, because what is happening is that these things are being brought to the surface in order for them to be released and removed. And so, for example, if you do practice healing or you do have had healing done and your DNA is being activated and you are on the conditional self-love, these parts may have existed to the surface.
Yeah.
Come up without a doubt. You're gonna feel these things. They're gonna come to the surface. And what happens when you experience these things is that it all feels very real.
Even if it isn't.
It's not real. Sometimes it's not even from this time.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's confusing. And it feels confusing because, you know, everything in your life could be wonderful, and then all of a sudden this bubble of old, shadowy nonsense, junk, anger, whatever was stuck in your field that needs to be released and brought to the surface, comes to the surface, and you're just in this cloud of stuff until it moves out of you.
Exactly.
And if you don't have the knowledge or to know that
if you can't watch it happening and see that it is happening, you get caught in a dynamic.
And it can create some challenges for the people that you're in relationships with or in your life. And so knowing this stuff as you're going through this process is very important. It's important to recognize that, hey, this is something old that's just being brought to the surface. Maybe I need to hang out in my room today and not unleash it on anyone else. So I think this is a really important one to focus on.
That's a very good point. And there, it brings me to a phrase before we go on to number 12, and that is, in order for you to become who you will be, you have to give up who you are. And oftentimes we have an attachment to these old patterns, which are not progressive or helpful, but we're so attached to them, we're vested in keeping them. And that's part of the extrication process, is getting rid of that shadow self. Okay, number 12.
Number 12 is frequency resonance. So as you continue to raise your frequency, which you can see there's a theme here with raising your vibration, raising your frequency, purifying your energies, as you begin to do that, as you continue to do that, you notice that some people begin to fall out of your holographic reality. And I think I alluded to that earlier when we were talking about soul family. So you understand now that your frequencies no longer match these individuals and these relationships. And so you might change your job. You might change where you live, even your country of origin. As you raise your vibration, you begin to attract to you new people, places, things, events that are more in line with your higher self.
This is Douglas Baker talks about this as the divine unrest. And we colloquially talk about this as the midlife crisis. And what's happening right now with many of our students is that they're having a midlife crisis earlier and earlier and earlier in their lives. So you used to have a midlife crisis between 40 and 50, say, and the men would go out and buy a Harley, or the men would go out and have an affair, and the women would go out and buy a Harley, or the women would go out and have an affair, because what they're doing is their lives, they've lived their lives, and they're now starting to question, what am I doing? Who am I? Why? What am I here for? And as you raise your frequency, your soul starts to speak to you. Hey, by the way, pay attention.
But it's important to point out that this is not just like one day. Like all of a sudden on October 31st, you're like, oh my God, I'm changing everything. I'm going to go have an affair, buy Harley, as what you're saying, using your example. But it's a process over time. Mm-hmm. You know, these things just start to fall away over time. Maybe the big events, moving to another country or getting a divorce in many cases or whatever it is, maybe the big event happens at one point, and that is what is talked about as the midlife crisis. My fingers are
in quotations,
but along the way, there are lots of different things that happen.
Well, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we are noticing is that people younger and younger are starting to recognize that their soul call, their genius, is tapping on their shoulder saying, pay attention. And so it will happen to these wiser individuals because their vibration is higher. Number 12, we now get to a place where we are managing our lives. We're managing our affairs, and we have the capacity to say yes and no honestly rather than feel obliged to say yes.
So
you're not afraid of saying no to other people when your inner guidance tells you not to do something or go somewhere. And you're not afraid of what other people's reactions are. And you are true to yourself. And every time you are congruent with what you want and what you don't want, you feel more powerful over and over. As well, you embrace the art of an honest yes when the universe delivers what you desire. You don't try to appear humble or spiritual by rejecting what you truly desire in your life.
I really love this one, because for any of you out there who are empathic, who are extremely conscientious, sometimes it's really hard to say no. You know, sometimes it's hard to feel like you're going to disappoint someone. And so you put yourself second. You put your own needs second. And I think that this is a super, this is actually one that happens right away. And this is not one that happens gradually. This is one where you're just like, yes, no, I'm just going to do what is the right and the truth for me, for my higher self, because this is what you come to a realization. where you see that this is you're connected to something higher.
And you've chatted in the past. You've chatted about people have hooks, have emotional hooks
yes.
into you.
We're talking about vampirism, energetic vampirism,
and how you can you when you get to a point, you can just cut those. You cut the karmic
mm-hmm.
ties. You cut the hooks. You cut
their
ability to manipulate you, because
yes.
certain people will play a victim. Or they'll play a victim to who they will sense will be a rescuer. So they'll go to a rescuer and say,
yeah.
"Oh, poor me," and then the rescuer feels obliged to say yes. Well, explain a little of that, of cutting those ties and vampirism.
I've done extensive study on this, because if you're an individual who is interested in healing, as I have been, or you're sensitive to other people's emotions, then in order to exist in your own field without anyone else being able to manipulate you emotionally, mm-hmm. you really have to understand what is yours and what is not yours. And so what happens in normal human interactions is that we give and take energy from one another.
Right.
And so sometimes it is mutual, and you know we're in an awakened relationship, and we are mutually giving energy to one another and taking from one another what is given. But most times people go and take your energy whether you like it or not, and based on how you were brought up and how your parents were, whether they were poor me's or just the type of energy takers or
right.
givers they were,
right.
that creates how you are. And I wrote a blog about it. And it's called, I have to go look because my mind is on other things. But I wrote a blog on it very recently, and it's talking about the four control dramas. And so you can head to retooling.org to our blog, and you can read that blog about
okay.
how we deplete each other's energies.
Being able to say yes and no to things, okay? And it's very important. Now, 13 brings us to harmonious family relationships.
And there's a really famous quote by Ram Dass, and he says, "If you think you are enlightened, go spend a weekend with your family."
And we, in the aromatherapy kinesiology business, we carry an oil called Harmonia, which is releasing baggage and releasing a bunch of that stuff. And I think what happens, you have to realize that enlightenment doesn't happen in a cave, and you can come with the best intentions, and then you can show up and your mom or your dad or your siblings can say something to you and just push all your buttons, and then you sit there and you go, oh my goodness gracious, right?
Well, that just goes back to that whole subconscious patterning that we were talking about, and how we're programmed by our early experiences. And so if your presence, if you're becoming more conscious, if you're working on your immediacy in everyday life, then this is very likely to smooth out. And as you grow, what you notice is that your family, your soul family, also grow.
Absolutely. Well, and your biological family, you become less
yes.
you become less enthralled with their drama, and you embrace the phrase, let karma happen. I'm happy to be here and listen to you, but I'm not going to get
and I
as
love
engaged,
you
and I love you and I'm not but I'm not engaged in this drama. I'm not engaged in these things. You have the ability to clear and cut the cords of attachment and karma, and you carry on in that place, which brings us to 14, which is a very important one.
Number 14 is no guilt and no shame. So shame and guilt are two of the lowest energetic frequencies that humans experience. And they are what you would call energetic blockages. So in order to embody your higher self, you obviously have to let go of your identification with shame and guilt. And from an energetics perspective, what you would know is that shame resides in your solar plexus. So that's just right below your heart. And then guilt resides in your sacral chakra. And so these are two lower chakras, and naturally they're going to have the lowest frequencies. And that's what you would think of as the negative emotions of those two chakras.
And they're also used quite diligently to manipulate people.
Absolutely.
To manipulate people, to shame them. And a wonderful book and a wonderful TED Talk by a woman named Brené Brown.
Yes.
has done some wonderful work on shame and guilt. And one of her books is called Daring Greatly. I think this is the book that she speaks to in one of the TED Talks. But she talks about how everybody has shame. If you don't have shame, you are a psychopath.
You're not a human being,
not
right?
Not a human being, yeah. And everybody tends to deal with it in different ways. But part of the way to extricate yourself from the shame and blame game is you raise your vibration out of it and you recognize that you can manage it by recognizing that everybody have it and being vulnerable in that place and carrying on and also feeling worthy of love and acceptance.
Yeah, so that book is called Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. And if you are someone who experiences shame or guilt and that's something that you're working through, we highly suggest that you read that book or at least just head over to YouTube and check out that TED Talk.
Brené Brown on vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, number 15. Now we start to entertain the thought of your genius speaking to you, okay?
So number 15 is making decisions in line with your higher self. So instead of making decisions based on fear or righteousness or ambition or competition or lack, you're going to make decisions more in line with your higher self, and you're ultimately going to be working with what is called divine source or source will. And you're going to become more aware of the cosmic laws. So you're going to become more aware of things like the law of one and the law of cause and effect and unconditional love and cooperation and perpetual motion, non-judgment, the law of free will. These things are going to become more of the rules and laws that you begin to live by.
You also recognize that the law of free will is a very interesting law in an esoteric sense. And the law of free will, which comes to the let karma happen, is you get to play in this arena and you get to do silly things and realizes the consequences of those silly things.
Yeah.
And then you come to the phrase which we know and we've said every now and again, you realize that God's way, Mother Nature's way, in alignment with the laws, is the best way. And you realize when you act against those laws or contrary to those laws, it has effects that are never in alignment. Okay? Okay. Number 16, which is being in that place of inner and outer abundance. Okay? Lack and limitation are a thing of the past. You've embodied a state of absolute inner abundance that's being reflected onto your reality, onto your holographic reality. You no longer seek to extract love or approval or appreciation from others. You are the very source of that, and happiness is within you. As well, you've transcended the spiritual bypass that money is evil, and you know that money is merely energy, and it is the flow of that energy that contributes to your prosperity. We liken it to, there's a difference between prosperity, living a prosperous life, and profiteering.
Mm-hmm.
Taking advantage of others by forcing them to facilitate your agenda to their own detriment, okay?
Yeah, and you know that not sharing or not being fair, being unfair, and
the three C's. It brings us to the
mm-hmm.
three C's of cooperation, collaboration, and collectivism. As go we, so go I. It's very important.
And that is also a cosmic law.
A cosmic law, yeah, exactly. Okay, number 17.
Number 17 is a great one, and I think that this is a really great one. It's number 17 is mind is unplugged from the matrix. So what this means is that you can clearly see that there's a hidden agenda of those individuals who have a want or desire to control others, to control the planet. You no longer resonate with the news of the official story, which
mainstream media.
Yeah, the mainstream media, the mass mind, and you have an inner truth detector, so to say, that can sense when someone is lying, and you have really become immune to the low frequency strategies and the ways that many mainstream institutions seek to brainwash and program and propagate ideas that only serve a very small few.
And the mindless consumerism and the herd mentality seems ridiculous to you. This is the unplugging from the matrix is the taking the red pill, right?
And actually, we are going to be talking about this one in particular more in depth next week.
And Jeff will be actually putting up a vlog this week, midweek, talking about this. We're doing an interesting experiment right now, and we'll talk about that next week, but it relates directly to this.
Yeah.
And something I wanted to pass along, and I think that this is really important, is one way that you can do this yourself is mostly everyone uses social media. And if you're someone who's constantly on Facebook, unfollow the people who are constantly looking, you know, fishing for, to make other people feel guilty, propagating negative news. Propagate your Facebook feed with positive news sources, truth, people who have good things to say. You can follow us on Facebook at Facebook/retooling as well.
Alrighty. Number 18.
Number 18 is say goodbye to idolatry. So as you begin to awaken your creative powers and your godlike nature, you no longer put other people on a pedestal. You are your own inner guru, and external gurus, you begin to see as teachers and as a reflection of your own unlimited potential. And the forces of your worthiness and deservedness drive you to achieve whatever you set your mind to. You literally become the master of your own reality.
Nobody's going to do this for you. And we propagate the thought, you have to do your own push-ups. We won't do your push-ups for you. And any teacher who suggests that they can, you got to drop tools and run from. Okay, this time is people grabbing and owning their genius.
And owning their own awakening, owning their own discrimination, their ability to discriminate between what is real and what is, what's a real teacher, who has right intentions,
yeah.
Who's here to really teach a higher level of learning, and who is just
full of
nonsense.
Malarkey.
Yeah. Yes,
malarkey is always a good word to use instead of horse
two
pucks. Okay.
Number 19.
This is love, grace, and gratitude. This is overflowing with gratitude.
Yes, this is such an important practice.
Yeah.
It can change the fabric of your life, as Jeff would say.
Gratitude is your attitude, and gratitude is your prayer. The sense of lack is foreign to you. Instead, you cannot stop counting your blessings. The feeling of gratitude multiplies wherever and whatever you have and brings you even more positive experiences. You are ever grateful for the challenges and setbacks that are inevitable in life, and you can't help to see them as opportunities for growth, and you probably have a gratitude journal. Now, one of the practices that some of us participate in is waking up in the morning and expressing your gratitude for something, 1, 2, 3, 5 things, whatever it is. And there's a wonderful, another TED talk on a Harvard professor who is the happiness professor. And he talks about the art of how being happy is productive and creative and delightful and incredibly beneficial to your well-being. It's very, very important.
Well, I will say this quickly is most people don't know this or realize this, but gratitude actually is a tool for abundance. So when you express gratitude for something, oh my God, I just had delicious pure water. It multiplies that thing in your life. Oh my God, I just had a really lovely, kind interaction with another person. Thank you so much. Whomever, God, soul, self, genius, whatever you want to call it, when you express gratitude for that thing multiplies. And so every time you express gratitude for something, you are literally multiplying it in your life.
There you go. That's Harry Potter-esque. That's white magic-esque.
What number was that? Alchemy?
That was 19.
Number 8.
Number
alchemy.
8 is alchemy. There you go. Now, number 20.
Number 20. I love this one. This is the most important one.
It is the most important one, and it's the one that we often take for granted, and we don't resonate enough with it, and that is don't take any of this stuff too seriously.
Okay? Don't take yourself too seriously.
And some of us are want to take ourselves too seriously, and some of us haven't the ability to laugh at ourselves and laugh at our foibles. You're human, and part of the realm of humanity is recognizing that we are hardwired for challenges. Challenges are going to happen. Stuff is going to happen. So life is meant to be fun, and you know that. Being too rigid and too disciplined sucks the fun out of everything. This is very Ray 5.
Well, if you ever listen to or watch the Dalai Lama, he is constantly giggling and making jokes all the time.
Yeah.
He's constantly laughing and giggling. And, you know, there was a movie in either the late 90s or early 2000s. I'm not really sure what the date is, but it's called Dogma. It's kind of a silly movie, but they depict God in this movie. And God is played by Alanis Morissette. And, you know, right. She runs to the grass and she smells the flowers and she does a headstand. You know, it's just like, you can still be spiritual, you can still be on the path, and you can still laugh and joke and have fun. And
Matt Damon and
Ben Affleck.
And Ben Affleck, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I remember that movie.
That's great. I love that movie.
Okay, in keeping, ladies and gentlemen, as we are wont to do and not to do in terms of taking ourselves too seriously, and we are wont to be of service to our listeners and to our followers, and we are wont to turn the lights on for as many people as we can.
And he means followers in a social media sense, not
yes.
like in a another sense.
We are delighted to be of service to you, and we are delighted to continue the work we do, although we're not going to do your push-ups for you. We are happy to share these insights. And today we covered the 20 signs that you are embodying your higher self. And we would like very much to express our gratitude for us fulfilling one of our directives in our life.
Mm-hmm. And we would like to ask you to please visit our website, retooling.org. You can follow us on Twitter at retooling.org. Or you can follow us on Facebook. And thank you so much. We will see you next week. Next week, we are talking about an experiment that we're doing.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jeff Dunphy.
And this is Jameen.
And this is Retooling for Our Coming of Age. This is Friday, June 19th. Thank you for your attention, and thank you for allowing us to be of service.